Good morning, everyone. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to share my research with you this morning. My interest in domestic abuse came from my former role as a DCI on a domestic abuse unit. I, like a number of students, was gifted with a very lengthy research question. As you can see, my research took the form of a case control analysis of offenders issued with a domestic violence protection order, or DVPO, in Hertfordshire. And it was a retrospective and prospective study. So my research was based around three principal research questions. First of all, whether the national DVPN, DVPO policy, whether it was being implemented appropriately in Hertfordshire's domestic abuse cases. My second research question focused on whether offenders in cases in which a DVPO had been issued, whether they had a different prior criminal history when compared to a sample of similar cases where a DVPO had not been issued. And when we're talking about prior history, that's in terms of volume of offending and harm of offending. And my final question was whether there was an association between the issuance of a DVPO and any difference in the prevalence, frequency, and harm of domestic abuse when you compare it to a similar group who didn't get a DVPO. So a quick summary around DVPO legislation. It's an emergency non-molestation and protection order. It's issued by the police. You require a superintendent authority, and then it goes to a magistrate court. There are up to five prohibitions on the order, and they're all designed to stop an offender having further contact with a victim. It can last for up to 28 days, and you can have more than one of the orders. They came in as a result of the Crime and Security Act in 2010. There was initially a three-force pilot in West Mercia, Wiltshire, and GMP, and there was a Home Office evaluation following that pilot. And interestingly, the Home Office stated that they felt that they bridged a gap in safeguarding victims. There was then a national rollout in March 2014. My own force, Hertfordshire, we got on board in June 2014. And when I started this research, in our records, it indicated that we'd given out 112 when I started my research. So just a brief summary around my research design and methods. So as I said, I undertook a narrative approach, and I was looking at two groups, those that got the DVPOs and those that didn't. Now, to get those samples, you recall initially I said I had 112 cases where they'd received a domestic violence protection order. Now, when I drilled down into those cases, I identified 24 cases where, although they fulfilled the criteria to get a domestic violence protection order, the circumstances around those cases were so rare that it would make any sort of matching process really difficult. So there was cases in there, for example, where we had female offenders, or cases where orders had been given between same-sex couples. So I made the decision to reduce and take out those 24. When I further examined the sample, there was another 14 cases which were given in what I would say in error. Now, the legislation says that if there is an alternative method by which you can control an offender and safeguard a victim, then you should go for that alternative method and not go for a order. So for example, in amongst my 14, there were cases where people had been charged but had also received an order. So I made the decision then to remove that 14, which actually reduced my sample size then to 74. So I then looked to then find a sample of cases that didn't have DVPOs. So to get to that non-DVPO sample, I looked at the criteria of what was left in that 74, which was a domestic incident had taken place between the 1st of July 2014 and the 1st of August 2016. It had involved a domestic abuse crime and not a non-crime. The incident had to have involved an arrest, or if someone hadn't have been arrested, it had to involve an interview for a DA matter. the arrest had to result in a no further action disposal. It had to have a single male offender, had to have a single female victim, and the incident couldn't already be in the DVPO sample. And the offender and the victim also had to be intimate partners of one another. So I applied this matching criteria to Hertfordshire's domestic abuse data, and this produced a sample of 2,656 cases, which was just too unwieldy. So I then had to try and reduce it further with a matching process. So I developed that by getting the Home Office codes for all the 74 cases within the DVPO group and all the cases within the non-DVPO group, and then I applied the Crime Harm Index to both groups. And then working with my supervisor, we then tried to match cases from the non-DVPO sample to the DVPO sample, and that was based on the fact that they occurred roughly within the same time frame, so about a week, and also they had to match on the same level of harm. And as well as incident matching, I also did offender matching, which meant if the offenders appeared in my DVPO group, they couldn't then appear in my non-DVPO group. And then if two of the DVPOs matched the non-DVPO sample, then the one that was the best match was retained. This resulted in me getting a, as you have already said, the DVPO group, 74 of those, and 148 in the non-DVPO group. So moving on to the results. So if we look at this, these results in the context of that question one around inappropriate use, this pie chart represents Hertfordshire's DVPO usage. You can see where I've removed the 14 cases, which I think are errors, and that represents 12.5 of the cases. So in other words, in Hertfordshire, we've used it incorrectly in 1 out of 8 cases. And because of all that matching, where we looked at the 2,656 cases, effectively, we've identified a raft of cases that should have got DVPOs but didn't. So moving on to question two, which looked at prior criminal history. Now, the starting point for the prior criminal history was the 1st of January 2012. I picked that so we could get a good spread of prior offending. And the cut-off point was the date on which they got arrested and they received a DVPO, or they were arrested as part of that matched incident. Now, the big issue for me was around data and data extraction. Because of the way the data was presented, I couldn't actually take out all the domestic abuse data, so that is all offending. But to be honest, when I dip sampled, the majority of it was DA offending anyway. So what does this actually show? This shows that in the DVPO group, they had the greater number of prior arrests, and also that the difference is statistically significant. Looked into these prior arrests further to see if there was a presence of a power few. As we've already touched on, that's the group of offenders who are responsible for the majority of arrests. And you can see the results in the next slide. So you can see in the DVPO group, 37.8% of offenders committed 83% of the total prior offences. And in the non-DVPO group, 25.7% offenders committed 80% of the prior offences. This analysis indicates a slightly higher disproportionality in distribution of these prior offences. So although the non-DVPO group committed far fewer prior offences, more of these offences were being committed by a smaller group of offenders than in the DVPO group. So further analysis around that question too, when we're looking at the prior offending. So once again, the DVPO group had the greater prevalence of offending, and once again, it was statistically significant at the 0.05 level. But I also looked at the prior crime harm through the two groups by again applying the crime harm index, and there was no, the difference was not significant between the two groups. So what this research has shown is there are statistically significant differences in the mean number of prior arrests between the two samples, but no significant difference in harm. So if we move on to question three, which looks at post-offending. Now, the cut-off point for the re-offending was the 1st of August, 2016, And just a reminder, again, this is all offending, not just domestic abuse. And once again, DIP sampled, the majority was anyway. What this figure indicates is, once again, it's the DVPO group, so the ones that actually had the order, they had the greater amount of reoffending than the non. And once again, it's statistically significant, which is actually at odds with what the legislation and the intention of the DVPOs were, was actually to stop reoffending, and which is surprising, consider we had this national rollout of the legislation. Now, how this prevalence of post-reoffending compares to frequency can be seen on the next slide. So not only were the DVPO group arrested more after the issuance of the DVPO, but they were also arrested more often. And once again, the difference is statistically significant. It's worth mentioning, though, that there can be, could be an alternative explanation for this reoffending, and it's something that Lee touched on with his presentation, where we talk about increased reporting because of victim empowerment. Now, this wasn't something that I covered within my research, and it is obviously a subject of lots of discussion, and it could probably be a dissertation in itself. But I also looked at the crime harm of the post-offending, like I did with the prior offending, and again, there was no significant difference between the two samples. So what do these results mean for the original research questions? So I think this research has shown that the policy has not been embedded in Hertfordshire, and you can see that because of the low numbers, the recording errors, and the fact that we used it inappropriately in 1 out of 8 cases. Question 2, is there a difference in the prior harm of the two groups? Yes, there is. Statistical analysis shows that the DVPO group were arrested more and more often, but interestingly, they were no more harmful, which suggests that DVPOs are being on aggregate reserved for those with the most severe criminal history. And it's actually this criminal history is the thing that's influencing whether someone gets a DVPO or not. And for question 3, is there an association between people getting a DVPO and any difference in the prevalence, frequency, and harm? Well, yes, there is. It's statistically significant difference in the prevalence and frequency, but they're no more harmful, which makes one question the value around DVPOs as a crime reduction prevention tool. Now, before you rush to the conclusion that DVPOs have failed in Hertfordshire, it's important to remember it's a really small number, and I did have issues around the methodology, particularly around the matching protocol. But within my own force, we have used this data to look first of all at our recording practices, to deliver new messaging around the use of the order. So it has actually been of use to us. But for me, this is only the start, because you've got to move away from retrospective and prospective studies, and you've got to get into the realms of RCTs. Now, any trial that randomly allocates a safeguarded measure to one group of people and not another is not without its challenge. But what I would push back and say, I know at least in Hertfordshire, we had 2,656 cases where we effectively did that, but we just didn't realise we were doing it. And there wasn't any, that we know of, an adverse impact or any negative consequences. So for me, in the interest of establishing what actually works in terms of domestic abuse, safeguarding and prevention, then I think it's a challenge that we should actually try and take on, and I leave you with that challenge. Thank you.